Everybody, welcome to another episode of Courtside with Beamilton Tennis, part of the Tennis Channel Podcast Network. As always, here with my co-host and Hall of Famer, Steve Flink. I love the Sunshine Double. I love how we get to do multiple episodes with these extended tournaments. It's just a great time to be a tennis fan in the States.
Yeah, it is, David. And not to put a damper on this, but the Sunshine Double could have used a little more sunshine this year at both events. Because they've been so unlucky with the amount of rain. And even today, a lot of spitting. Even when there's been no rain in the forecast in Florida, they've been having these little delays, little cloud bursts. But, you know, we're coming down the home stretch and it's looking like a great finish for Miami.
Well, let's timestamp it then. We're Monday night around 8:30 p.m. Eastern time. Carlos Alcaraz has just beat Gael Monfils. And we'll get to that a little bit later, but the weather in Miami looks great from here on out. So I echo your thoughts. Hopefully no more issues going forward. All right. Hey, two episodes ago, we started with the name of Peyton Stearns. And if it's okay with you, Steve, I'm going to start this episode with Peyton Stearns. And I will say to the good players that are out there, get your wins against her now. Because in the future, I am a firm believer that wins against Miss Peyton Stearns are going to be few and far between. She loses a three-setter. It was topsy-turvy, and we can get into it a little bit, against Vika Azarenka. But I will say this, Steve, over 50 winners. That's not 1-5, listeners. That's 5-0. Over 50 winners from Peyton in that match, Steve.
Well, obviously, and most of them off her explosive forehand. And I'm just amazed the number of times she can seemingly be leaning back and in a position where she could barely get the ball back into play, you would think. And then she'll hit an inside-in forehand winner like it's second nature. So it happens too frequently for that to be an accident. So look, that match with Azarenka, we saw the thriller against Sabalenka in Indian Wells when she had triple match point and then a fourth match point to follow, finally lost that one. Here came all the way to 4-4 in the third against Azarenka, marathon 5 or 6 deuce game, lots of chances to hold. If she'd hold there, if she had held, I think probably she would have completed the victory. But Vika's experience got her through that match by the skin of her teeth. Yeah. So it was another gallant effort in defeat from Stearns, and not one again to discourage her, because these hard-fought, close skirmishes that she's been involved in lately, they'll start going her way inevitably. And she's not afraid to lose, and that's a rare quality in a player of her inexperience.
Oh, you nailed it. She is not afraid to lose. She's not afraid of the big moment. She actually loves the big moment. These are all learning lessons. These are a lot of firsts that are still coming for her. And like you said, the more time she gets these experiences, they're just going to continue to get her better and they're going to start flipping her way. Now, the one thing that we need to be careful for, and it doesn't just apply to Peyton, it applies to everyone, is health. Because you saw her kind of shaking her arm out there at the end of the match. I didn't know if it was cramping. She withdrew from the doubles because of shoulder. So again, 50 winners off the forehand wing, your arm's going to get a little tired, but the most important thing for her right now is to stay healthy and continue to absorb all these firsts that are coming her way. And gosh, she just has some innate abilities that I see that you don't see in a lot of players. And I cannot wait to see her in the future.
No, listen, and I would say she scared the daylights out of both Sabalenka and Azarenka, who were kind of relieved in the end that they were able to gain those victories. And that's how good Stearns was on both occasions. So she comes from the slow hard courts of California to much quicker courts here and looked equally good at both tournaments.
Another feel-good story, Simona Halep. She played her first-round match against Paula Badosa. Halep comes out firing up 6-1. She eventually loses in three sets. She had some arm stuff going on too. It was just so good to see her back on court, Steve.
It was. Just a couple of comments about that. She was ailing. You could see she needed the trainer. You could see how delighted though she was to be back competing on that level again and not distressed by her loss, and got a lot of support. I just want to make one editorial comment while we're here. This afterwards, Carolyn Wozniacki surprisingly came out, David, and said, and she's entitled to her opinion. I have great respect for Wozniacki, but she felt that given what had happened to Simona with her suspension, that she didn't deserve a wild card. And I really vehemently disagree with that, because to me, the ruling was that it was inadvertent. And that's why they shortened the suspension and didn't give her the 4 years. So, yes, she made a mistake in the sense of not being careful enough about her team giving her something that she shouldn't have taken. However, the ruling was very clear that this was not intentional, and therefore they were going to reduce it to 9 months, and therefore she was eligible to come back. So to me, James Blake had every reason to say to Simona, come on, come to Miami, we'd love to have you. I was a bit surprised by Carol, and it was sort of a lack of generosity of spirit, I felt, from a fellow competitor. And she did make it clear that she didn't mean it personally towards Simona. She just thought anybody in that position should not get the wild card. But I must say, I'm not in accord on that one. I think the fans were happy to see Halep. They're very supportive. And Halep handled the criticism with a lot of dignity and said, listen, that's okay. I feel like I've gotten a lot of support from others, so I'll take the support that I can get, and didn't get into sort of a war of words, which is wise. But Wozniacki's stance did surprise me.
Yeah, no, your view, certainly no disagreement with me. It was a little surprising to hear that, but hopefully we could just move on and Simona can play consistently, be healthy, and perform on the court, which, she should be rightfully doing at this point.
Well, you know what, David? She looked very close to her old self. I was very pleased to see her hitting the ball that well. Naturally, you need the match play. She doesn't have it yet. She'll get it. And Badosa played very well. And so no disgrace for Simona, and on the right track for sure.
Well, you said, about how well Halep played. James Blake did some due diligence. He wasn't going to give her a wild card for her to just get killed. And you heard him talk about this on the Andy Roddick pod.
Yeah.
He talked to Darren Cahill and some others and made sure that she was training hard and she was ready to perform at this level. And she certainly was.
Yeah, and that was mainly confirmation, because I'm sure that James had heard through reporters and other broadcasters, but it was very clear, I think, that Simona was training hard all the way through and hoping that things could break her way and she would be back. So didn't surprise me that the report that he got was, yeah, she's ready to go. And she proved it. And now I really hope that there'll be a lot of other tournament directors that will follow in James' footsteps and give Simona those wild cards and let her get those matches now to the point where her ranking gets back up there again and she doesn't need them.
Yeah, so the winner of that match, Steve, played Aryna Sabalenka. And we're not going to get into the details of what really happened with Aryna Sabalenka's, told ex-boyfriend now, but he passed away right before the tournament started. We didn't know how Sabalenka was going to react in that match against Badosa. They're friends, supposedly. You saw a nice moment at the end of that match. Sabalenka did beat Badosa. Sabalenka then lost the next match. Again, not surprising, I can't even imagine what she's going with, what she's dealing with her emotions and whatnot. Again, I want to try to tread carefully not to go too deep into this, because I'm not close to it, and I don't think you're very close to the situation either, Steve.
No, but look, that match was played in great spirit, and it's clear they are close, and Badosa seems to be well liked by a lot of other players. By the way, I find that interesting. I mean, it seems to be a widespread feeling that her congeniality, her humanity, whatever you want to call it, that the other players like her. As for Sabalenka, she'll recover. She'll get her emotional equilibrium back again, but she comported herself quite well. And it did catch up to her in the next round, but so be it. When she gets back out onto the clay, where she's always played very well, I think that she will have had time to heal and we'll start seeing her best tennis again, especially as we get close to Roland Garros.
Yeah, let's hope so. And I think all tennis fans are behind her, and hopefully she can deal with what she needs to deal with peacefully, and hopefully she can get through it okay. Because again, I can't imagine, none of us can imagine what she's going through. So we wish you well. And yeah, hopefully she can just deal with a horrible situation, horrible situation. Okay, let's flip it over to the men's side. You know, Andy Murray, gosh, every match he plays, Steve, every match Andy plays is like, you just, it could be 7-6 in the third. It could be over 3 hours. He beats Matteo Berrettini. Matteo wasn't right. He almost fainted like during that match. That was a little odd. Andy follows that up. He beats Echeverry. Then he loses a heartbreaker, 7-6 in the third. I think he was up in that breaker too. Early on,
he was up 5-3, so 2 points.
5-3 in the breaker. The news just came out that he had pretty significant injury on his ankle, and he's going to be out for quite a while now. As you and I were just chatting before we hit the record button, you know, we're hoping he's ready for the grass season or Wimbledon at least, right?
Absolutely. I mean, what's unfortunate is you have the feeling, the way he's been talking recently, that his hope is to end his career possibly at Wimbledon. Certainly giving hints of that. And the last, you certainly want to make sure, I mean, I guess if the timing is now, we're still in March, he surely can be ready for Wimbledon, but it's a shame for him. And maybe he wouldn't have played that much on clay anyway, but he didn't need this as he comes down to the final stages of his career. Bad luck.
Yeah, I agree. So well wishes for Andy, and hope we get to see him on the grass. Saturday, by the way, was just not a great day for the Americans, Steve. Taylor Fritz loses. Francis Tiafoe continues to struggle. And I know there's that change of coaches, and sometimes you got to give it time, but there's starting to be a trend here that's not going in the right direction. Let's hope that flips soon. Tommy Paul also lost. He was actually leading in his match. He rolled the same ankle that he did in that tiebreaker when he was only a few points away from winning that semifinal match against Daniil Medvedev. That ankle, those injuries are tricky. You just got to make sure it's healed 100% and strong. And you know, he's got to take some time now to really heal that ankle. This is second time on the same spot that he's now turned it.
Yeah, and it had been a gap of about a week. I think it had been a week, actually. So you would have hoped that it would have healed. And in the early stages of the match, it appeared that it had. But now he'll just have to, you know, make sure that he gives himself plenty of time. And if that means not playing Monte Carlo, for instance, don't do it. Don't do it. Wait the extra week. There are a lot of clay court events on the way to Roland Garros. So I'm sure, especially after this happened here on the heels of Indian Wells and the Medvedev match, that he doesn't want round three of this. He's got to clear it up.
Yeah. Let's flip it over to, though, an American that had a good result, and that was Chris Eubanks over Dan Evans, 7-6 in the third. Eubanks was down 4-6 in that third set breaker, saved an incredible match point. Go to the highlights, you'll see it. It was really a sitter that Dan Evans had. Hits a cross court, Chris guessed right. Little chip slice forehand passing shot down the line. For tennis fans, if you ever want to see an entertaining player play tennis, watch Dan Evans, because I think a ton of his matches, there's always something a little extra that's going on in Dan Evans' matches.
It's true. He played a very entertaining match against Carlos at the U.S. Open last year. I've seen many. But let's not underestimate, let's not sell short the appeal of Eubanks. It was great to see him playing this well again. Yes, he needed a little bit of luck there on that match point, as you described, but he still had to save another on his serve, which he did. He won the match, and then he served for the first set today against Zverev before losing that one 6-3. So he seems to be that this will give him a little bit of encouragement as he heads back out onto the clay. It's been a tough road for him since the great stretch he had in England last year on the grass, winning a warm-up tournament and getting to the quarters of Wimbledon. So I think Eubanks was pleased to sort of be able to show some of his best stuff again after having not really played that well recently. So I was happy for him. And if he could have served out that set against Zverev, who knows? It was good effort. He probably should have won that set. But those two matches combined were a reminder to himself of what he can do when he's at his best.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see his results on clay. We all know he had the great result at Wimbledon. last summer. It'll be interesting to see how his results reflect on clay. So he'll be
Well,
watching them.
yeah, I mean, I'm not hoping for too much there, just some wins along the way, because the key thing is to get back out on the grass where his game is much more effective, and we saw it last year, and he can do it again. And he just doesn't want to get into a bad losing pattern on the clay and lose early week after week. So I think he's looking to just get some wins there, stay in good shape, get the match play, and then play one or two grass court, hopefully a couple of grass court tournaments leading up to Wimbledon, where he's got to protect those quarterfinal points. So I think Eubanks is on the ascendancy again. I sure hope so.
Good. All right. I'm going to give you four names, and I'll give a little tidbit on each. And then I'm just going to ask you to kind of talk about them, because all four are struggling. Andrei Rublev struggled since he had that issue with the lines person a few tournaments ago. Stefanos Tsitsipas struggling. He lost to Shapovalov. Shapovalov then lost his very next match. Shapovalov is trying to come back. He's struggled with results. And FAA, I mean, we've all had such high hopes for FAA. He had a good, really good end of the year when he ended that tournament drought of his, right? He won a bunch of tournaments in a he won a few tournaments in a row, Steve. So those four players, Rublev, Tsitsipas, Shapovalov, and FAA. What's your outlook on them going forward? The I won't say the remainder of the year, but the clay and through Wimbledon, let's say.
Rublev, I'm not worried about at all, because he plays a ton. There are times when he beats himself up. He's his own worst enemy. He gets a little bit frantic out there and angry with himself and lets it out on the officials at times, which is why he was disqualified a few weeks back. That things happen. But he always, to me, seems to be able to turn the corner again. I'm just not worried about him. One of the biggest hitters on the tour, and yet incredible ball control given the velocity of his shots. Great serve. There's a reason why he's been in the hanging around that number five ranking spot or slightly lower for a long, long time. And he'll be back. He'll get back to the top of his game. Tsitsipas, I'm very worried about. I mean, it's been a bad losing trend for him. I mean, I honestly think back to it was just the beginning of last year that he's in the Australian Open final, his second major final in 23 when he lost to Novak. And, you know, the rest of the year there were disappointments. He lost to Eubanks at Wimbledon. He's had a struggle. Okay, he's in a relationship with Badosa. That's now been going on for quite some time. So I can't believe it's that anymore. Is it the coaching? Could be. His father overbearing? There are a lot of reasons, but it's really worrisome to me what's going on with him and the number of different players. That's not – Shapovalov is just – barely been able to win matches. He was out for a long time with an injury, hasn't been at his best. That's a match that maybe a year and a half ago, I wouldn't have given Dennis much of a shot to beat Stefanos. So I'm most concerned about him. Now, you rattled off four. We got Rublev. We got Tsitsipas. The last two are?
The two Canadians, Shapovalov, who you were just talking about. And
Shapovalov, he is a great shot maker, and we saw him I remember when he lost to Djokovic in the semifinals of Wimbledon back in 21, I guess it was. You know, I mean, I felt like, wow, you know, I don't disagree with Novak, who went up to him and said, you're going to win a major. It's going to happen for you. Consoled him in the locker room. Has not been a good run since he lost to Djokovic. And I don't know. He lost a lot of time with his injury, but he's so talented that I can't believe in his case with his big game. I still see a revival in his case. And FAA, I'm worried. The package is there, the fellow Canadian, the entire package, the virtuosity of his game, the serve, the aggression, a little weakness on the back end, but not a terrible weakness. But he's had a really rough time of it lately, and Zverev beat him routinely. And I still believe that in his case, that he'll get on a roll sooner or later again in this season. He's also not a bad – he's surprisingly good on clay. People forget that a couple of years ago when Rafa won his last French, one of his toughest matches, or actually toughest completed match, was a five-setter with Felix. So he can play on clay, and he certainly can play on the grass and the hard court. So I just think maybe by then, at a certain point in the clay court season, he'll finally – put together a good tournament or two and start believing himself again. I feel like he's physically seems fine physically, but mentally he's off his game.
Yeah, I think it's a confidence thing, right? Because like you said, the package is there. He has all the tools, all the tools.
And last year, I think he was hurt a lot, but I honestly don't think that's the case right now. But you can see there, you know, when he's playing well, there's a lot of kind of quiet emotion, if I can put it that way. Not excessive, but fist pumping and looking over at his team. And you can sense, you know, that he exudes a lot of confidence and self-conviction that is totally missing at the moment. He'll be back.
So some guess fun, the one women's matches.
Okay. The one that worries me the most, David, is Tsitsipas. I'm not saying this is permanent, but I look at, you know, the way guys are exploiting his one hand and backhand now, and he doesn't seem to be serving quite as well. And he's in the doldrums. I know. We know how gifted he is. He's had too many great years since 2018. Really 18 through 23 is a lot of great years. But I'm concerned that I'm a little concerned that his very best he may have left behind him already with the two major finals. He's not going to stop competing and hang around somewhere between 10 and 20. But are we going to see him back bidding for a place in the top five again? I have my doubts.
Yeah, we'll see. We shall see. All right, like I was saying, there's some fun women's matches that have been going on, especially in the last couple of rounds. Garcia and Osaka, it seems like they play all the time now. They played three times since the start of the year. Garcia beats Osaka in a close match. Today, she's now, 2-1 against her on the three times they've met so far this year. She then followed that up beating Coco earlier today in three sets, 6-3, 1-6, 6-2. That match to me is kind of pick 'em. I talked last time about how Coco's result in Indian Wells, I think credit to Coco for getting as far as she did in a semifinal there, because I don't think she played that well. I think she would agree. Credit to her game and you know, taking on the personality of our coach of winning some of those matches ugly. But against Garcia, to me, it was kind of like a pick-up match. It's not surprising.
Well, so the result kind of bears out what you said, 6-3, 1-6, 6-2, topsy-turvy confrontation. Coco got down a break early in the third and couldn't recover. But I do want to go back to Naomi for a second. Naomi was playing well. It really, it seemed to be getting better tournament by tournament. Had a tough loss to Mertens in Indian Wells. And then here, she had a really nice performance against Swiatkowska on Saturday. Beat her in straight. Should have been a bit easier because she served for the match at 5-3 or 5-4 second set. Didn't close it, but got it done in the breaker. And then she was up, having lost a tie break in that first set against Garcia. She had a 4-2 lead in the second and then won only one more game. And you could see she was a little disappointed in herself because, as you and I were discussing prior to the podcast, in the second tournament in a row, she was going to potentially earn a meeting with Coco and renew what was a kind of a nice rivalry there for a while before Naomi left and had her baby in return. So I feel like that was too bad because, frankly, I think in either case, either Indian Wells or here, that Osaka would have had quite a good chance to beat Goff. And she denied herself that opportunity. That's what I think frustrated her. She wants to get on a slightly better roll. But still, the Swiatkowska win was a good one. It wasn't a terrible performance to lose 6-5 to, you know, yesterday. So I feel like she's still getting there. It's just that had she won that match, I wouldn't have been surprised to see her at least in the semis here in Miami and maybe playing Iga. It didn't happen, but now she'll have to go out onto the clay, which has not been a pleasant surface for her to play on up until now. But Naomi I really like the way she's comporting herself. Overall, she's really enjoying it out there. Got a little frustrated in the second set in this latest loss, but overall, she looks fit. She looks happy. She's playing well. Some tremendous forehand winners in the win over Swiatkowska on the run, on the dead run. So I feel like she's coming around and she believes she'll get back to that top, which you and I were discussing in one of the last podcasts. It'll happen over the summer for sure.
That's what I was going to say. Yeah. Well, her opponents are going to have to deal with her over the summer in the hard courts.
Yeah, they will. And maybe even at Wimbledon, I believe she's due to make a breakthrough on the grass with that good a serve. I think she can adjust on the grass. And if she can maybe shorten her backswing a bit on the returns and get a few more back into play. That's always a key on the grass, but she serves so well. And I could see her starting something there, but continuing it in a very big way across the summer on the hard, to the point where at the US Open, if she can have some good runs, semis, finals over the summer leading up to Flushing Meadows, then she's a genuine threat at the US Open.
Correct. Another entertaining, fun match, head-to-head. Rybakina versus Madison Keys. Rybakina won 6-3, 7-5. It's interesting. Rybakina got sick in Indian Wells, and she said for 8 days it, like, knocked her out, Steve. Like, she didn't eat. She couldn't train. She couldn't really do anything. It was good to see her beat. It was a good result for her to beat Madison Keys. Madison is always tough to play because Maddie could hit you off the court like she does with anybody. You remember that U.S. Open match with Sabalenka?
Oh, yeah.
Sometimes Maddie gets inconsistent, but again, beating Madison Keys, good win for her. And then entertaining match going on right now. It's in the early stages. Emma Navarro versus Jessie Pegula. That should be a good one. Where Carlos Alcaraz just beat Gael Monfils, as we said in the intro, and also right now, and I'm not sure if they split yet, Ben Shelton versus Musetti. Musetti won the first set. Ben was up a break in the second.
So. And now they're on service 5-5 deuce on Shelton's serve. So
okay, so Musetti broke back. Okay.
Yeah, he did. It's a hard-fought second set there. The reward is to play Carlos, if you can call it a reward. But Ben would like to get a second crack at Carlos. He loves playing. He has a very good attitude, very positive attitude. And in his mind, I think his attitude is, look, I really do have nothing to lose when I play those guys, and I can scare them with my left-handed serve and my attitude and my aggression. So I think he'd really like to earn that appointment. But I think Carlos most likely, I like his chances against Musetti or Ben. Either way, he's playing well. A little bit of a lapse at the end of his Monfils match. He was up 6-2, 5-1, and lost 3 games in a row, but served it out very comfortably at love in the last game. And
the crowd didn't mind it because those last few games were entertaining, so that was good.
Oh, yeah. No, they were. It was nice. And Monfils had a beautiful forehand winner and was to get back to make it cut the gap to 5-4 and raise his arms to the crowd. He did his showman's routine, which, and they always appreciate that. And Carlos was not at least bit offended, but Carlos also made it clear in the next game, this is over. You've had your comeback, but I'm going to seal this triumph right now. And he did. So it was nice. Yeah, it was nice that Monfils didn't have to go off the court a 2-1 loser and feel a bit humiliated. He made a go of it in the second, but never really felt like he was going to win it. But my point is that I think Carlos got such a boost out of winning Indian Wells. And, you know, he'd been hearing all the talk. He'd been reading all the comments on social media. He was very honest about that. And inside himself, he was, those inner doubts were lingering. And it went all the way back to last summer and the tough loss to Novak after having a match point in the final of Cincinnati, the loss to Medvedev in the semis of the US Open, and then in no more finals the rest of the year, despite a semifinal showing at the year-end championships. And then the year starts with the kind of a disappointing performance against Zverev in the quarters of the Australian Open. So for him to now, then a few other difficulties then, including that ankle injury that he recovered from quickly. So here he is now, having won Indian Wells for the second year in a row and feeling more like his like the old Carlos. And you can see it in the way he's conducting himself on the court and the confidence, the exuberance is back. And I just feel like he, in his heart, he thinks he's going to win this tournament. Now, he might have to beat Sinner again, who's on the opposite half. Sinner and Medvedev on the same half at the bottom. Carlos, you know, as we just talked about, he's going to play this match against either Shelton or Musetti. Then he's going to play. I'm going to look at the draw right now. Let me just bring that draw up on my phone. Yeah, so he's got the winner of that match, the Musetti match against Shelton. Then you have Dimitrov and Hurkacz are going to play, and the winner of that match will play probably Zverev, who plays Khachanov. So one of those guys could be Hubie, could be Zverev, could be Dimitrov, would meet Carlos in the semis. But I have to say, I really like his chances to win the tournament, period, but especially to get to the final, and then we'll see. I'm hoping maybe we get the rematch with Yannick, who's got a nice clear path, by the way, David, even though he had a top three setter, Griekspoor gave him a hard time. Sinner, Griekspoor won the first set 7-5 and took Sinner to 7-5 in the second set before Sinner ran away with the third. But he's going to play O'Connell and then either Mahatch or Arnaldi in the quarters. It's hard to see that Sinner is not out to a semi and probably playing Medvedev, who plays Kepfer to play the winner. Medvedev would then play the winner of Rude and Jerry. So looking to me like Carlos clear favorite on his half, although I guess the guys that I mentioned on these faster hard courts, the guy that I think might give him the biggest scare would be Hurkacz with the serve. And Hurkacz on hard courts twice last summer gave tight three setters with Carlos, especially the second one where he had a match point in Cincinnati. So you got that. And Sinner, to me, Sinner should come out to play Medvedev. And I never sell him short, but I would like Yannick's chances again to repeat his Australian Open win and beat Medvedev for the fifth time in a row. So all things being equal, no injuries, no, you know, freak occurrences, I like our chances of seeing Alcaraz and Sinner meet again, but this time in the final of Miami. And remember that last year when Alcaraz and Sinner played in both tournaments, Carlos got the better of Yannick in Indian Wells when he breezed to the title and beat him in straight. Tough first set, saved a set point, I believe, there. He did, and then won it in straight. But in Miami, Sinner turned the tables on Carlos and won in three. So maybe that pattern's repeated, maybe not. Obviously, Sinner would really like to avenge the loss to Carlos and Indian, but Carlos, somehow I feel like he might even be more confident this time, David, than he was a year ago when he actually did lose the rematch. That this time there's a sort of a sense of relief and exhilaration in the fact that he feels like he's playing his best tennis again. He's healthy, and then he sees Sinner play a match like the Griekspoor match, and maybe Carlos is thinking, well, maybe he's struggling a bit, maybe he's not at his best. In any case, we could well get that matchup again here in Miami. I'd love to see it.
Well, the next time we do this, we'll see if what you just said kind of developed, right? And we'll see if we get that rematch, like you said. Like we said, the weather looks good. There shouldn't be any interruptions with the rain. We got plenty of good tennis ahead. And the next time we talk, we're going to have champions on both the men's and the women's side. And we'll discuss all the ladder rounds that happened at the Miami Open and the conclusion of the Sunshine Double, which is always such a fun time for tennis fans globally, and especially those in the States. Thanks for your time tonight, Steve.
Thanks, David. Enjoyed it.